We're looking at trends in rural churches and what the data tell us. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. According to Pew Research, Protestants and Roman Catholics are losing congregants at a brisk pace. And Americans who identify as atheist or agnostic or none of the above, that is going up. So we're tracking faith trends here in Wisconsin. We're looking nationwide and we're hearing your insights. Do you belong to a faith community or a parish or congregation? Have you seen a change over the years? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Savannah Kimberlin is a research director at the Barna Group. It's a California-based firm that studies trends on faith and culture. She developed their Faith Trends database. Savannah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Brooke Hempel is here. She's Senior Vice President of Research, overseeing all studies at the Barna Group. Brooke, welcome to you.
Thank you as well.
Well, let's get the lay of the land, Brooke, for Wisconsin's religious affiliation. How many Wisconsinites identify as Christian or some other religion?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, that's still the majority. We still see close to around three quarters of people who say that they would be Christian. That doesn't mean that they go to a church regularly, but they would identify in that way.
And how do we break down other religions? What are some of the smaller shares?
Sure. About 1% says they're Jewish, Buddhist, and Muslim are 1% or even less. And then there are 4% who list some other faith. The population of those who don't affiliate with a faith, who would say that they are atheist, agnostic, or no faith at all, is just under 20%. It's 17% total, around 18%. I'm sorry, 12% who say atheist.
And has that number stayed steady over the years, or is that going up?
The atheist population?
Yeah,
it has been growing, or the none. Actually, more commonly what we see is people saying none. By generation, we're seeing a shift in really the youngest teens and young 20s willing to say, actually, I would consider myself atheist. More commonly, people just say, that's not really relevant to me. I don't consider myself any religious faith. So they would just say none. And so that number has really been growing. People may have heard of this idea, the rise of the nuns.
Yeah.
It's been a pretty significant shift in very recent years. So for, you know, the past 30 years that Barna has been tracking faith trends, people really did identify as Christian on the whole. And really only in the past 10 years has that shift to saying I'm none or I'm atheist pretty dramatically increased, alongside a drop in those either identifying as Christian and or attending church as well.
So, Brooke, of the 77% Christian Wisconsinites, how important is their faith to them?
Well, yeah, so we asked that question and asked them to say if they strongly agree or somewhat agree or disagree. So we have a full 59% who say, I strongly agree. I'm a Christian, and I strongly agree that faith is important to me. And another 31% who somewhat agree. That's actually stronger than the national average, pretty significantly. Nationally, 48% strongly agree. So you've got 59% in Wisconsin and 48% nationally saying my faith is actually very important to me. So that's quite different than what we see across the country.
We're looking at religious trends in Wisconsin and across the country with Brooke Hempel and Savannah Kimberlin. They conduct research on religious trends and culture for the Barna Group. You can join in. Our faith organizations and church groups important to the economic and social strength of your community? Have changing demographics had an impact on your church? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Savannah, even though we see this, strong connection to faith, church attendance is a different story here. What do the numbers of church attendance look like in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so this is where these statistics really get interesting. So we have been tracking faith across the U.S. Pretty robustly since the year 2000. So we pulled some charts for you guys, and in 2003. The percentage of the population in Wisconsin that attended church within the past month was at 80%, which is really strong. So imagine in 2003, as you're walking down the street, 8 in every 10 people that you were to come across had attended church within the past months. That's pretty stark. But then in 2018, we see that that percentage has dropped to 45, which is about half. So think about it that way. About half of the people now that you pass on the street have attended church within the past month.
Do we know anything about such a huge drop?
Yeah. Well, we certainly see this same trend reflected in the U.S. population as a whole. So the national comparison in 2003, the number was 77%. And nationally today in 2019, it's at around 42%. So we're seeing that drop nationwide. And certainly this correlates with the rise of the nuns that Brooke just talked about earlier. As people are starting to affiliate with Christianity less and less, the need or the desire to go to church is just declining on the whole. In another study that we recently conducted, we asked questions to 18 to 35-year-olds, why are you not engaging with the church? What's your perception of the church? And I think it's no surprise that on the whole nationally, the perception of the church is declining these days. So people just don't see a need to attend or to affiliate with that religious organization.
So, Brooke, here in Wisconsin, the attendance numbers, as you say here, don't match the percentage of people who say religion is important to them. So how do you as researchers weigh the significance of attending a religious service, you know, showing up versus being a religious person?
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's a disconnect there. So there's a couple of things that we think are going on. Nationally, there's just a shift towards less physical or face-to-face interaction with individuals. And so that has a lot of factors behind it. That just has to do, to some degree, with the busyness of our lives, the number of activities that people are involved in, or ways in which they have just overload in their schedule. It also has to do a lot with social media and finding connections to people in other ways and places. And then just this general sense that actually being in the place of church is not as much a social norm. There's not as much kind of pressure to be there in person. And so those things tend to be behind this disconnect. So you'll see a little bit more of this very occasional church attender. They might still be feeding their faith in other ways. And we definitely see that. That people may be involved in a Bible study that's separate from their church or just not part of the Sunday morning service. They may even be consuming church service online. There's quite a lot of online services available through different churches now, and the engagement with those is very strong. So they may still be connecting with their faith and connecting with other people of faith, just not through Sunday morning service. The other factor that I want to point out, which has a lot to do with shifting demographics, especially in the church, is the reality is when you hit a certain life stage, especially older in your life, that health concerns or health challenges actually really do prevent people from physically getting to church more and more commonly. And so we want to be respectful and say that's not that everyone's walking away from church. But if you see a shifting demographic in the church where the larger proportion of the attendees is older, and then also those older attendees find it harder to get to church regularly because of various health issues that come up here and there, then that makes the overall figure drop as well.
We're looking at faith trends, rural churches with the Barna Group's researchers. We have Savannah Kimberlin and Brooke Hempel with us. Are faith organizations and church groups important to the economic and social fabric of your community? Join in at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're spending the hour talking about churches and the changing religious landscape here in Wisconsin and around the country. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Churches have been at the heart of many Wisconsin rural communities, but our world is changing, right? Many family farms face financial uncertainty. There's the migration that we've been talking about from the rural towns where people grow up into cities. And then attitudes toward religion have changed. Did you grow up in a church environment, but as an adult have found other communities? Has a change in church leadership affected your faith community? Does being part of a congregation make you feel more connected to your neighbors? We're at 800-642-1234. Email your questions to ideas@wpr.org. And the Barna Group's lead researchers, Savannah Kimberlin and Brooke Hemphill, stay with us. You know, Savannah, how have you seen declining membership affecting parishes, affecting these churches, especially in rural communities? What is the impact there?
Yeah, we definitely see that there is a drop in attendance in rural communities. But it's interesting because the reasons why we are seeing a drop in attendance in rural communities in Wisconsin is probably different than in other parts of the country, because there are different challenges, right? Being in a rural community and having a faith organization flourish in a rural community is more difficult. So we're seeing something really interesting happening when we talk about the correlation or the relationship between congregation size and pastoral tenure in rural communities. We see that there certainly are a lot more small churches in these rural communities, but we also see that the pastoral tenure is much lower. So there's high pastoral turnover here, and so that certainly is affecting the landscape, the religious Christian landscape.
So more turnover means less ability to make relationships with the congregation itself or set down deep roots. What is the impact of that turnover?
Yeah, so that's where this gets challenging, right? It takes a pastor quite a while to establish trust with a congregation, and to really get to a place where they're confident and where they're thriving as an organization, with the leadership and the congregants being in relationship with one another. So we're seeing that there's some harsh realities coming to life, that there's burnout for many of these pastors and their families when they come to these small towns, and relationship is just really not being established. So perhaps there's not the depth in these faith communities that the congregants are hoping for.
Let's bring in Edwin now, joining us from Rice Lake. Hi, Edwin. Hey, Edwin, are you there?
Hi, I am. So I am a Wisconsinite atheist, and I just wanted to say that I think I speak for a lot of secular Wisconsinites when I say that I think we're very excited about these polls, and I think many of us see overlooked in Wisconsin versus like the Christian majority. And I was just wanting to ask if our guest speaker.
Edwin, you're breaking up or falling off the line here. And Edwin feels, you know, secular people feel overlooked by the majority. Are people looking into other religions, Brooke?
So we don't see so much people moving into other religions. And I'm actually frequently surprised how low the figures are in the Muslim community, in Buddhist communities. It's still very much single digits. And even though I feel like there's actually a good voice that we'll see, at least in the media, for these different religions and the Jewish faith. And so we don't see, just in terms of the statistics, a huge shift from Christianity to other religions. It's much more of a, you know what, spirituality just isn't relevant to me. I'm thinking about my day-to-day life, and it doesn't really fit into that. There was a really great quote we heard actually from a gentleman who was Jewish, who was about 24. We were doing a focus group, and I said, you know, you don't attend temple anymore. Like, what has driven that, or why is that not important to you? And he said, you know, I grew up going to different gatherings of the Jewish community, and I still gather with them in homes. But in terms of going to services, that's really just not relevant to my life anymore. And he literally said, you know, 100 years ago, people didn't have community. They were spread out. They didn't have connections, and they needed
that place of faith to be their gathering place. But these days, and this is the quote, these days I've got my phone, I've got my friends on Facebook, I'm good. So there's just not even any consideration of something spiritual or something larger than, you know, our life here, you know, day to day. That's really the goal, and having those relationships is the point there. But needing to have a different perspective about spiritual matters really just isn't in the picture for most people.
We're looking at the toll of declining church attendance and what that means for communities, especially here in Wisconsin. Brooke Hempel and Savannah Kimberlin, they conduct studies on religious trends for the Barna Group. You can join in. Our faith organizations and church groups important to the economic and social fabric of where you live? Has the makeup of your community, maybe the population of your town, had a role in how your faith community is changing? We're at 800-642-1234. Savannah, a third of U.S. adults strongly agree that churches are a place where they can get help. A bunch more people also somewhat agree with that statement. Historically, how have churches served this purpose?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's interesting. People go to churches for help in so many more ways other than just spiritual. People in communities have historically turned to the church for their physical needs to be met, and this is certainly still the case today. We're actually seeing a generational shift where in all different types of neighborhoods and communities, rural, suburban, and urban communities, people are turning to the church for justice reasons more and more these days. They're looking for the church to rise up and be a beacon of truth, I think, in their communities. So we're surprised consistently in the data that communities, even those who do not have any faith themselves, are looking to the church for physical, very real, very practical needs to be met.
And when you say justice, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so it's interesting that people are looking to the church for to really facilitate conversations, and they're looking for the church to step into conversations regarding topics like diversity and racial reconciliation and those sorts of things. Even in regards to this was interesting, caring for single mothers, caring for widows, those sorts of things, caring for the elderly population, and being very outwardly focused and taking care of the parts of the community that perhaps have been overlooked in other ways.
Well, let's look at congregation size for a moment here. Suburban areas have the largest churches. Brooke, what's going on there? Is it the impact of mega churches?
Yeah, and that's been a trend that really rose up a lot in the 80s and 90s especially, and now that's transitioning a bit. So there's been an interesting movement over the last, you know, 3-4 decades around church size. So this concept of the mega church really grew, especially in the 90s, really peaked. And then in the 2000s, that was a very common type of church, and they especially grew in suburban areas where land was readily available, and then the population was close enough to attract that many people, right? So it was actually really a geographic matter, if nothing else. It just kind of worked out well in those environments that there was space for these churches, and they became a place of community, and that was actually really wonderful, powerful force in those communities. But over time, we have seen more and more that many of the large churches have begun to spin off other campuses or other individual churches, either through church planting or what they call multi-site churches, where it's like, oh, we're all part of Grace Church, but we're Grace North or Grace South. And they have multiple campuses that are connected to the church because those environments felt too large and overwhelming, and you just felt mixed in the sea of people, and people really desired more relationship. And so those smaller campuses give them more space to do that. So that's been an increasing trend over the last 10, 15 years of some of the larger churches, to some degree, kind of downsizing by spinning off different congregations that can be smaller. we see in the youngest generation, in millennials especially, that they really desire, very often they'll desire something that's really local and gives them personal connections. And I suspect that has a lot to do with the reality of being so interconnected to the world. Really what they desire is smaller and local. So that's kind of ironic because it's where we started, right? That's where the church always was, especially in rural communities where, you know, it was really kind of a center gathering place of populations. It provided those relational connections. And I think we're seeing a shift back towards that, even in urban environments and suburban environments where people just desire more human connection more so than place connection.
We're looking at the challenges of churches as they define themselves and look to the future. Barna Group's researchers, Brooke Hempel and Savannah Kimberlin, they stay with us to break down the faith trends here in Wisconsin and nationwide. Did your community parish or faith center close? How did that affect your town? Do you volunteer at your local faith organization? Do you help out at your church? What do you do? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this conversation right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about how churches that have often been the bedrock of the community, they're facing declining membership. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So I want to share with you, about a decade ago, I attended a church that closed, and this was an integral part of a blighted neighborhood that had devastating poverty. The homes that lined the streets around this church, some were boarded up and occupied, some had gaping holes in roofs with blue tarps covering the gaps. And that last service, I will never forget. The church was a sea of people. Some who had gone there as kids were there one last time, and I looked around and I saw tears streaming down faces. It felt like a funeral, but it was really the death of a congregation. So join in with your stories, your questions, 800-642-1234. Did your community or parish center close? How did that affect your neighborhood? The Barna Group's Brooke Hempel is a Senior Vice President of Research, and Savannah Kimberlin is Director of Research there. Savannah, when you talk with churches, what is the process of grief when that church closes and when you're working with churches on what happens?
Yeah, the grief process is very real. I think for many congregations that do close their doors, and we're seeing so many churches these days close their doors. It's an interesting time of transition, though, as a nation as a whole, because there is also a very vibrant church planting movement going on. So it's interesting as we see these people grieve the loss of a church, and it's interesting as we track to see how many of those people end up becoming a part of this new church planting movement. And it's actually a lot of them. A lot of them are taking the step of establishing new relationship. And of course, we're seeing that it's taking a lot of time for trust to be reestablished with the new congregations. But there are churches opening their doors as well.
Let's bring in Joshua now, joining us from Watertown. Good morning, Joshua. Oh, and Joshua just left us. Brooke, you know, we're talking about generational differences earlier. Why do generations seem to have different views of religion?
There's a lot of factors at play there. And so we have to kind of look at world events that may have shaped people's perspectives. There's also just the education system. So one of the things that has really gone along with the trend of finding that faith isn't relevant, or that that's not really something that spirituality isn't something that I either believe in or want to pursue, is really a shift in the education system. And I'm not going to place any judgment on how it has been done historically, but the fact is that, 50 years, 100 years ago, schools taught concepts that were Christian concepts. And over time,
schools have decided to be more neutral, and textbooks have become more neutral. And so that is not part of the kind of generally accepted conversation around different topics in school settings. So whether that's history or science or the humanities, that's just really not woven into the education. And so it becomes less and less relevant. On top of that, we also see a real strengthening of science. And we look at data from about, I'm going to say roughly 40 years ago, and talking to people who are in the baby boomer generation, and they would often say, I see science and I see what it says, and I see the Bible and I see what it says, and I think they give me two different pictures of kind of the same thing. When we ask that same question of young people today, of people in their 20s and teens, they say they see science and the Bible or religion in conflict. They don't know how to make sense of the two, and they're more inclined to lean towards what science shows them and the evidence that it provides. And so to a great degree, there's just a evidence for them there that actually I don't think there is something spiritual, which is why we see this, it's not relevant, popping up. So I'm not going to place any, you know, kind of assessment on what's happening there, but that's just a factor of how people have processed their worldview growing up. And that has been one of the factors that has shifted pretty dramatically over time. And we see that then, I think, playing out in whether or not Christianity and a church seem to be relevant to one's life.
Let's bring in Aaron now, joining us from Peshtigo. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, good morning, Kate.
Good morning.
Yeah, so I go to a rural Lutheran church up here outside of Peshtigo. It's a quintessential farm church on the hill. A lot of agriculture around, a lot of farmers go to it. And like a lot of churches, I think it's an aging congregation. Young people just don't seem to be making it a priority. I'm 28. My wife and I were active members here, but we see a lot of couples our age that show up, have their kids baptized, and then we never see them again. And I just wonder, you know, is it that church isn't a priority anymore for younger people, or, you know, they think it's important enough to have their children baptized, but not enough to come every Sunday. So wonder what your guest thoughts are on that.
Yeah. Aaron, do you have thoughts on that, that, you know, that they'll go through the process of baptism and then, as Aaron says, they're gone?
Yes. So we do see that. So especially in Wisconsin, if we're looking at the fact that nearly 6 out of 10 people would identify as Christian, then yes, you can see that they would want to go through that kind of ritual of saying, I've dedicated my child to the same faith. So that affiliation is probably still driving that connection, but not the community. And we found our communities in so many other places. Really, I attribute it more so to just a feeling of a lack of need. That people are just finding their fulfillment and their enjoyment elsewhere and don't feel that they need the church. And I think, Kate, your example of the church that you saw closing is a great one, because for such a long time, churches filled a significant need, and they still do. But if you think back decades and decades ago, even centuries ago, the church actually provided a ton of social services and was the place where people would go. Not just to connect with people, but to find help for a variety of things. And so if that need isn't there, and if the social need isn't there, there's not the same need to connect in the same way. And as human beings, we respond to our felt needs. And so there isn't that sense of urgency. And I really see that in the responses we see from young people, that it's not, I don't trust the church, or I don't like the church, or something bad has happened to me that makes me want to walk away from it. It's more just, I've got other things. I'm not really interested.
Hmm. Janet now in Madison has thoughts on this. Hi, Janet.
Hi, this is Janet. What I'm finding is I still go back to my little rural church that I grew up in, but I'm finding that this church is also very, very small, and we're not bringing in the young people for many reasons. But one of them I'm seeing is that people are no longer looking at the church in their community as the only choice. They're more willing to drive 10, 15 miles to a church that has more to offer, activities, a Sunday school. And so it's not a problem. They don't see a need to have to go to their own community church. So I see our church dying out, as well as the younger families are coming, but they're also having to conflict with other activities. There's soccer and in school activities and sports on Sunday morning. So there's just other activities that the younger kids are involved with. So I think our little church may not make it.
Oh, thank you so much for calling in. Brooke, there are competing interests, as Janet said.
Yes, it's true. You know, decades ago, it was considered off limits to schedule activities on a Sunday morning, and that's kind of not the way at all. I joke that in certain cities, Sunday brunch is a sport, you know? I mean, people just have other things that they can and will do on a Sunday morning, and when they compete for their time, people make their choices of where they would prefer to spend their time. The dynamic she mentioned was really interesting about young families and young people. So this is a really important one, that families do tend to attract to a church more because they are in that stage of life where they're connecting with community. And while activities may pull them away, there's still, I think, that desire for connecting back with the church in many cases. We've seen that. But for those who are single, who are young adults who are single, church can actually be a really tough place for them. A lot of churches, you know, do a lot of activities around family, and they highly value family, and that's a great thing to celebrate. But it leaves those who are single, and including those who are divorced or widowed, feeling kind of marginalized or out on the edges and less able to connect, which is a tough thing because you would hope that that'd be exactly where they would find connection and community. But they often feel uncomfortable being in those environments, and we see that more and more. And so when they're driving to some other church, and often it's a bigger church, it's because there will be more people like them at that other church. And so what they're seeking is community with people like them. And that's why we do increasingly see this stratification across age groups. It's actually really uncommon at this point to see a truly multi-generational church, because people do tend to segment by their age, and then they have different preferences around their worship style by their age as well. So we do actually see that driving a lot of the changes demographically in the church.
Could the different views stem from more recent issues like the sex abuse scandals or allowing LGBTQ people in Christian churches?
Yeah, I mean, that's across the board. Those are two big issues that have actually had a huge impact on the church, and not just as they've hit the media, but for a number of years as they've been kind of bubbling under the surface. Whole denominations have been split over these issues, and a lot of churches have unaffiliated with certain denominations because of disagreement over those particularly hot-button challenges. And people have different views. And so what we actually see is a lot of churches going their own, you know, being independent, not being affiliated with a broader network so that they feel that they can navigate the beliefs of their congregation, beliefs of their convictions of their leaders as well. So that's interesting because you get, I guess, more factioning in some degree of people's beliefs and therefore their practices. And so increasingly, we say the largest growing denomination in the U.S. is non-denominational, for sure.
Let's pause right there as we talk with Brooke Hempel and Savannah Kimberlin. They conduct research on religious trends and culture for the Barna Group. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. We're talking about the state of churches, church attendance that's been declining for decades now nationally. The pace appears to be accelerating, and we're looking at religious trends here in Wisconsin. Brooke Hempel and Savannah Kimberlin, they conduct research on religious trends and culture for the Barna Group, and they stay with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Harris is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Harris.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What's on your mind about this?
Well, all right, so my son has, like, autism, and he's nonverbal. And, of course, like, sometimes, like, church can be exciting for him, and, you know, he makes a lot of noise. And if the church asks me to leave because my son is making a lot of noise, I don't know why I would go to that church or why I would even think about even, like, coming in for anything for them, since they can't also accommodate my son.
So that has happened to you?
It's happened to me. It's happened to, like, friends of mine who are also in, like, groups. Like, we're in parent groups where we've noticed. And there are churches that do deal, like, that are, you know, accepting. But there are a lot of churches that, like, your child's making noises and they ask you to leave, or they ask you to leave the service, or just come down and do something, and you can't get the spiritual message.
Yeah, Harris.
So, I mean, like, I don't know why anyone would stay if they were in that sort of situation.
Savannah, what do you make of Harris there, who says, you know, that sensory environment, you know, conflicts really with what his son is dealing with and doesn't feel welcome at a church?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point to raise. I'm actually going to let Brooke answer this one. She's got a wonderful response to this issue. So, Brooke?
Thank you. Yeah, Harris, let me just say that I completely understand. I actually have a nephew who is autistic, and he is 18 now, and his parents, my brother and sister-in-law, have really struggled with this. I got to see a beautiful picture of being with them at their church in Colorado one time, and I met the person who was his helper when they were at church. And this particular church, it was a large church, so they had the resources to do this, but they had a whole ministry, a whole department of people who were trained and equipped in how to help people with lots of different special needs. And in their children's program, they had all sorts of occupational therapy, spaces and helpers who really understood what these different kids needed. And I saw how refreshing that was for my sister and brother-in-law, who are exhausted. And so I can completely empathize with how that can be so hard to navigate. We actually did a study on this, a small study where we asked churches about their capacity to accommodate for different special needs. And it covered all sorts of things about accessibility to wheelchairs and people who were blind or deaf, and did they have ways to reach them? And then also kids with special needs and having people who are trained to help them. So the most common thing we heard was, we don't have the financial resources to be able to provide either the space for it or the people who were trained to deal with it. And so in the absence of that, they tended to say, well, we'll provide, you know, a place where someone can go outside and deal with whatever that is, you know, go into like a separate room and watch. Or they simply said, you know, our focus, we will try to accommodate, but our focus has to be on making the service welcome for all. And I absolutely get the tension there. So what we saw is churches going, yeah, we're not prepared for this. And many of them, I think, really desired to, based on their responses. We could tell that they wished that they could, but they didn't really know how to handle it. And I completely agree and understand and know that there's a whole cohort of parents out there who they consume church online because they really can't get one or more of their children into a place of being able to fit into what the church is expecting. And so that just makes complete sense. But I do think it's a really interesting opportunity for churches maybe to partner with organizations that can help them. So there are a lot of different nonprofit organizations and even ministries out there that care a ton about helping people with special needs. I think specifically of the Tim Tebow Foundation. They have an awesome event that's like a prom party for kids with special needs. My brother-in-law actually was a DJ for it one time. He was like, this is the most fun ever. and they partner with churches to help them put on these events and to help support these churches to support these families. So I think that's a great opportunity for churches to try to tap outside of their own resources to get help so that they can welcome people into church. Because it's not easy, and churches really struggle financially. But there are ways to navigate that, and I think that that would be a way to help overcome it. And I thank you for raising it, because the more churches hear that, the more they'll realize, gosh, we really do need to think about what we can do here.
Yes, Harris, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Rachel now in Eau Claire. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My comment is more regarding the gentleman who called earlier about people coming to church just and having their children baptized and then they never see them again. It's very interesting. This whole conversation is very interesting to me as somebody who grew up going to church, and then once I left the house and did my own thing, college, and became an adult, church is not a priority in my husband and myself's lives, and I have my own reasons for that. But I feel like with the millennials generation, we might be getting baptized. We might be baptizing our kids. I don't have any of my own, but I have this conversation with my husband. Would we baptize our children? And we're conflicting. And the reason I would is because I have that Christian guilt. I more would be doing it to please my parents versus it's important to me. And I'm wondering if you see that a lot, if there's the reason why people are coming in for those ceremonies or the
richness
baptism
of ceremony and tradition. Yeah.
Yeah. And versus, you know, it's that Christian guilt. This is what my parents would hope that I would do versus this is actually what I want.
Savannah, what do your trends look like in the area of tradition and you know, doing what past generations did?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is most certainly a reality for this generation. Wanting to keep tradition alive for the sake of honoring parents and loved ones, even grandparents, that is absolutely a facet of this story. That's certainly a component in play here. It's interesting as we explore tradition, because we at Barna wonder all the time, what is the next generation going to look like as tradition starts to fade in a way? And it's going to be interesting to watch that shift because, and perhaps we've seen this in Canada already or in other parts of the world, that as millennials start to raise children of their own, that desire for tradition is going to fade with time. But we absolutely see that that's the case. And it's interesting, too, because many times that also manifests itself in attending Christmas or Easter services with family and still remaining connected to the local church in a bit of a way. But we do wonder what is the future going to look like as those fade.
Well, as we look to the future, you mentioned earlier church planting and the trends that you're seeing there. What is that and where are we headed?
Sure. It is a more common form for a lot of reasons of church growth right now. And one of the ways that has manifested itself is actually, as Savannah was saying earlier, there may be a congregation or a church that's kind of dying out and a new group of people, young people who want to do church a little differently, will come in, connect with them and say, hey, we'd love to, you know, continue the use of this space, this building, but we want to really do it differently. We want to have church that feels like an expression that's authentic to us. And we have certain, you know, plans in place already to gather a community. So we'd love to do that in this space. And so we've seen church planting really pick up nationally in a lot of different areas. And it's the counter trend to the decline of church has been these younger, smaller church plants that do grow. And I think that's sometimes a funny term for people. It's just a startup. it's just a small community that sometimes grows out of a even a group of people who meet in a home who say, hey, we've got something here. Like, people are really loving this and wanting to be a part of this, and we're growing. So can we begin to build this into a church? Not for the sake of desiring to build it into a church, but simply because, wow, people are really growing and enjoying this community, and enjoying what they're learning.
Brooke, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having us.
And Savannah, thank you so much.
Yes, of course.
Savannah Kimberlin and Brooke Hempel are from the Barna Group. That's a California-based firm that studies trends on faith. And this is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.